Okay, so the one of the, there's lots of things to talk about in Yitro. One of the big machlokesim in Yitro is when it occurred. Did it occur pre Matan Torah or post Matan Torah? What does Rashi hold? Very good. How was that, Rashi? Rashi splits the whole story into three parts. Verse 12, Pesukim, he doesn't really take an opinion. He says there are two opinions in the Gemara and Abba Dazarach of Dalad. The actual discussion about Yitro turning up and suggesting to Moshe Rabbeinu to reorganize the justice system, that, he says explicitly and brings riyas that it occurred post-Matan Torah, not just post-Matan Torah, all the way after Luchas HaShniyos, after Yom Kippur, it says, Vahim Macharat. Macharat is referring to the day after Yom Kippur in the second year. And not saying in the first year, after the Chosh Shnias. And then the last Pasuk is actually referring to something that occurred much later on, the second year in the Midbar, when they sent Yitro home. So he actually splits the whole parasha up into three sections and doesn't see a necessary unity between them. But basically, these are stories about Yitro. These are not the introduction to Matan Torah. There are stories about Yitro. But more important for us is the discussion between Yitro and Moshe about how to run the justice system. Because post Matan Torah, the Ramban Kedarko Lekodesh insists that whenever it's possible to run things chronologically, we assume it's chronological, and the entire parasha occurs pre Matan Torah. Now he's much more a fan of that opinion. The question really is Lemay Nafkamina. In other words, what's the real fundamental or philosophical or longish difference between whether the arguments between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yitro, not arguments, the discussion between Yitro and Moshe Rabbeinu occurred pre-Matan Torah or post-Matan Torah. That's what I'm trying to work out. Now, the actual discussion itself between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yitro is also interesting. Try and work it out. Yitro says to Moshe, Nabaltimol, you're going to wear out. Moshe Rabbeinu was standing there from the morning till the evening, answering Shilas non-stop, right? He didn't have a moment to do anything, right? All the day, people are clearing up, asking Moshe Rabbeinu Shilas. Moshe Rabbeinu goes and asks Kodesh Baruch, he gives the answer back. He wasn't an idiot. He could have worked out Yitro's system, right? Like, why was he doing that? Yeah, Yitro comes, he just looks at the situation. It's so obvious that Moshe should basically teach everyone what to do, and how to pass on the easy shilas, and you know, you give them each a copy of Chai Adam, and they'll learn out the Chai Adam and Pinini Halacha, and they'll pass on the easy shilas. And then when there's a big question, I'll tell you a shilah that Lichtenstein asked us in the Bechina. Usually at Bechina at the end of the Zman, he's given us Bechina. So one of the Bechinas was on Ksubas. A child walking along who's intending to, your family intending to convert him, and he falls down into a mikveh, shnimdad v'nimtza chaser, and then comes up and eats and touches truma. What's the din of the truma? I was like, this was the chinah of the Lechshi Matthias. It was very fun. So the complicated questions like that you ask Moshe Rabbeinu, right? But the easy ones you could just ask, you could ask anyone. Why? How come Yitro was able to see it and Moshe Rabbeinu not? So you could say a very simple musavot, right? That when you're in the thick of things, sometimes you can't see what's obvious, right? A person can be stuck in a problematic situation, and the line in the Gemara in Brachas that a captive can't free himself. Right? You're stuck in a situation you can't really, you don't realize the absurdity of where you are. And you just need someone from the outside to say, look what you're up to. And it's always much better if the person does it for himself. Right? Like, one second. I've been consistently stuck in this problematic situation for a very, very long time. Let me get out of it. Right? And you could say a musavot, even Moshe Rabbeinu. This is a human reality that people who are in a situation doing something and then the load increases and increases and increases and then they don't realize it's unhealthy and they can't see it. Okay, you could say a musavot like that. I prefer to suggest another direction. This is an ideological machlokes. Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly what Yitro was trying to tell him, but he said, Yikov Adin Zahar, this is the way it has to be. And why does it have to be this way?
Because he had a great love for people.
He had a great love for Klal Yisrael. He wanted to do it for them. I couldn't resist his love pushed him to do it. In other words, it's the same idea. Sometimes he's been particularly, his love for Klal Yisrael pushed him to do it, even though it was unhealthy for him. But I think it was a much more ideological claim. Moshe Rabbeinu said, he covered in a Sahar that the people are coming to hear Devar Hashem. Right? It would be very nice. It would practically solve all the people's halachic shilas if I handed out copies of Panini Halacha and the Dayanim, you know, learned the easy halachas and they went to the Dayanim to ask halacha. But they're not coming to me, Moshe Rabbeinu, because they just want an answer to their shayla. They're coming to me because they want Devar Hashem. And if you look at the Pesukim, it's exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Right? They're coming to Drashas Hashem. And if the people are coming to Drashas Hashem, then they have to dafka come to Moshe Rabbeinu, who's going to ask a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and everyone gets the direct answer from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So Yitro saw the need for justice and for Psak and Halacha as a very pragmatic thing. I have, you know, I dropped a piece, a cup of milk into my chicken soup. What should I do, Rabbi? Right? And why are you asking? Because you want to know what to do with your chicken soup. So if all you care about is what to do with your chicken soup, then it doesn't matter who you ask. You can ask Moshe Rabbeinu. You can ask one of the Dayanim that Moshe Rabbeinu appoints. You can ask Google. And, you know, Google, what do I do if milk falls in my chicken soup? And it seems like all the websites say the same thing, you know. So, okay, you can read that normative stuff. That's why people pass them today, right? Halachapedia. So maybe that takel psak, the machlek is between Yitro and Moshe Rabbeinu. Yitro says you need to provide a pragmatic answer to people's needs, people's problems. And Moshe Rabbeinu understood, no, this wasn't just, halacha wasn't just for them to know what to do. People be Doresh Hashem, when we hear Devar Hashem, and they had to come to Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? Yeah. How does this question affect when it occurred pre-Matan Torah post? There, I think it's very interesting. Rashi's big raya that this occurs post-Matan Torah. Anyone know? Go on, Ari's on the ball today. Go on. There was no Torah to be Doresh. Specifically, what word did he call it? Almost. The other one. Chukim. It says, Moshe Rabbeinu, they come to anyone here, Chukah Tav V'Torah Tav. So Moshe says, there was no Chukim V'Torah, Chukah V'Torah Tav, pre-Matan Torah. Oh, concept of being Chukim only occurred post-Matan Torah. So how is it possible this parasha occurred pre-Matan Torah? Now, obviously, the Ramban answers this question and says, there was Mara, there was Chukim, there was various laws. The Moshe Rabbeinu had opinions about what should occur in the world, even pre-Matan Torah. Right? But Rashi also knew that, no? I mean, because Rashi is the one who tells us about all these things. So apparently the concept of a chok means a fixed law, not in terms of a chukata pesach. But simply, the word chok means something that's fixed in stone. Like a chok is to engrave in a stone. Something's fixed, and this is the way it has to be. The concept of a chok is only post-Matan Torah. Why? There was a massive sea change that occurred at Matan Torah in the nature of the Devar Hashem in this world. Pre-Matan Torah, there was no tzivui. There was no classic tzivuyim. It was Ratzon Hashem. I want to know what I should do. So in every specific situation, Hashem has an opinion, Ratzon of what should be. And it could be that depending on the circumstances, in this case it was this way, in this case it was this way, in this case it was another way. It changes. It's much more fluid. Why? Because Hashem still hasn't given sivuyim, commands. At Matan Torah, Hashem gives commands, and that from now on, what's Ratzon Hashem? That we fulfill the tzivuy. The big enough kamina is the flexibility. So for example, the midrash that talks about, the midrashim, talk about the avot keeping the Torah. Right? No, we all realize at a very young age it makes no sense. Because there was no Torah pre-Matan Torah. So what does it mean? It means that the avot were able to sense in the Midrash literally, it means the Avot were able to sense the Ratzon Hashem in each episode. They understood not that there was a Sivoy not to eat Basar Chalav, but they understood that it was not Ratzon Hashem that Basar Chalav should be eaten. It was a bad thing. They were able to sense that. They understood Kilayim was a bad thing. They understood that Staka was a good thing. They understood that all these things was good and bad. They were able to sense Tariag Mitzvahs. That was Ratzon Hashem. And that's why they kept it, even without there being a tzivoy. In other words, every single mitzvah has two parts. It has the actual tzivoy Hashem commanded me to do this. And it has the ideas behind it. The reason why Hashem wants me to do it. Kri Matan Torah, you would keep the mitzvah because of the reasons why Hashem wants you to keep them. Post Matan Torah, you keep the mitzvahs because the reason and because of the tzivoy. The nafka means the flexibility. We find the big kasha on all the midrashim the Avot kept the Torah is that the Avot didn't keep the Torah. Right? Throughout Bereishis, the Avot keep doing things that are against the Torah. Right? They marry two sisters. They marry their brothers. Pardon? He feeds his guests meat and milk. Right? The Malachim. So we were told in elementary school that he gave them the milk and then he gave them the meat. That's what we were taught.
6 hours late.
Yeah. No, the milk then and the meat.
Yeah.
There are numerous cases throughout Bereishis where it seems the Avot are not keeping the halacha. So the Nefesh HaChaim explains exactly this in the Kudah. Because the Avos kept the Torah because of the Ratzon Hashem, because of the values of halacha, so it changed things in every situation. Yaakov Avinu saw that it was Ratzon Hashem he should marry two sisters. He saw that the kochos of Leah and Rachel required him to go ahead and marry Rachel, even though he'd already married Leah. It was necessary for him to marry Rachel. It wasn't just his romance, right? Because he was trying to keep the Torah. But he saw in this specific circumstance that it was Ratzon Hashem that he should marry Rachel, and therefore he could go ahead and do it. Right? In terms of the meat and milk, of Yaakov Kamenetsky is a great book. He says, keeping Torah, pre-Matan Torah, was begeda chumrah. And you can't impose your chumras on your guests.
But he knew enough not to bury her in the same cave of Machpelah, because he knew it would be a shanda for the people.
Ah, Machon. Well, that's also true in the book. He realized that was the thing. Correct. So that's really the difference. So before Matan Torah, the only way in which you, Klal Yisrael, who didn't have this intuitive avot understanding, the way that they could hear Ratzon Hashem was only through one way. Was being Dorish Hashem, to hear directly from Kodesh Baruch Hu, what is Ratzon Hashem? They would ask Hashem, what should I do in this situation? Hashem would ask Hashem, and then he would tell the people. Right? And therefore it was necessary to go to Moshe Rabbeinu. What changed the Matan Torah? Hashem gave over to Klal Yisrael Torah. Chukim. Torah. It's the Mishpatim. The whole works. Now when I want to encounter a Kodesh Baruch Hu, I don't need to go to the greatest Navi of all time, Moshe Rabbeinu, but I can get it from Sivui itself is my encounter with Hashem. In other words, Torah is Hashem giving of himself over to Klal Yisrael. And when you learn Torah, when you learn Halacha, when you keep Halacha and you're encountering the Halacha, that itself is the encounter with Hashem. And that change occurred to Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, if you didn't get it directly from Hashem, it was just a pragmatic, what should I do with my chicken soup? Post Matan Torah, when the Halacha has been given over to Klal Yisrael, the encounter with Halacha is the encounter with Hashem. So in this machlokes between Yitro and Moshe Rabbeinu, that's part of the machlokes. And it depends whether it occurred pre-Matan Torah or post-Matan Torah. If it occurred pre-Matan Torah, I understand Moshe Rabbeinu. The people of Yemen's been Dorish HaSashem. There is not yet a load of civilian where you can encounter Hashem with the tzivoy itself. The place that, you know, you have to go to Moshe Rabbeinu. You have to. and comes along Yitro and misses the whole point of why people are going to be Dorish HaShem. He thinks they're just trying to work out what to do their chicken soup. He misses the whole point. And Moshe Rabbeinu is right. He covered in the Sechar. They have to come to Moshe Rabbeinu. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu agree to Yitro? One of two reasons. Either because he agrees that even though this is the way it has to be in terms of ideologically, he covered in the Sahar, pragmatically it's not sustainable. And if it's not sustainable, then it might be ideal, but it's not an ideal. An ideal which is not sustainable has to be modified. For example, it's an ideal for a guy to mamash learn Yomam Balaila, take almost no breaks in the day, you know, go to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And you know, eat at bare minimum, and but it's totally unsustainable. You might be able to do it for like 1 day, 2 days, 5 days, but then you'll go crazy. So it's not a Derech Hashem. Now, something which might be an ideal theoretically, but isn't sustainable, then you have to stop. And that's what Yitro taught Moshe, and that's why I agree. According to the Ramban, right, Moshe Rabbeinu post Matan Torah carried on what he'd been doing pre Matan Torah, but. Sorry, according to Rashi, that's great. If it got post Matan Torah, like Rashi says, then Yitro said, look, there's been a total fundamental change pre Matan Torah, post Matan Torah, and really Yitro was right. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu agreed. And why did Moshe Rabbeinu not see that? Maybe say the Musavu. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't see it. My favorite option would be to say the following. And you have to say this in the Ramban. The Yitro came pre Matan Torah, but when did Moshe Rabbeinu make the change? Post Matan Torah. Yitro was right pre Matan Torah, and that's when he made the suggestion. And then Matan Torah occurred, and now Moshe Rabbeinu agreed. Right? Pardon? Yitro was wrong, and Moshe Rabbeinu was right. And post Matan Torah, Yitro was right, but not for his reasons, for Moshe Rabbeinu's reasons. Go on.
Say that way, Torah wasn't showing, that's why you had to go to Moshe afterwards. Torah is now under.
Exactly. It kicks to everything. Right? The whole concept of Lo B'Shamayim here, it means the Torah has really been given over to Klal Yisrael. And once given to Klal Yisrael, our interaction is with the Torah. Right? Rav Chaim writes an amazing thing, which is one of the ones that always, I guess, relieving for me to hear. Somebody in a different shift. That Rav Chaim writes that when I learn Torah, I don't always feel that I'm getting close to Hashem. That's the Metzius. I don't always feel, you know, the Rav has this thing describing, Rambam's there, and Rashi's here, Tosfos there, and the Shechina's above his head. He felt like his mamish. We don't always feel that. But by definition, we're closer to Hashem. Because the Torah is the Kutcher Brich Loraita Chad Huo, whatever that means. But it means something that the Torah is very much part of Hashem. And when I learn Torah, even though I don't feel the emotional, spiritual high, I don't feel like I'm the Svat Shabbaton, nevertheless, I am, by definition, close to Hashem, because this is the encounter with the Kodesh Baruch. And the more I recognize that reality, the more I'll feel it. But even if I don't recognize reality, it's still true. I'll finish off one half a line. The Perkei Avos, it says, someone who learns Torah, right? So, Komi Shalom Torah, you know, won't be Nizok, all these things, will be all these amazing midas, and it has this amazing effect on you, and you end up being a big tzaddik, and all you need to learn is Torah. To the extent that Velojin, when they wanted to introduce Musar into Velojin, they turned them down. Because they said, Musar is medicine. It's better than the people that are sick. And if you're healthy, so you don't need medicine. What's a healthy person? Someone who learns Torah all day is healthy. He's encountering Kodesh Baruch all the time. The Torah itself will refine him as an individual, and he doesn't need the Musar. So Velojin turned them down. That's the story. The last line of the story is, and Velojin didn't realize that actually they were sick. That's the way it's written up. Right? You know, it was a catastrophe that Velojin didn't let Musar into the Yeshiva because the Torah they were learning wasn't refining them. And Velojin had lots and lots of problems. All the Gedolei Torah came after Velojin, and lots of Koifrin and terrible things also came after Velojin. Right? You know, Baruch Hashem, statistically, You know, we're in a lot better place than the Russians. That's scary stuff. You know, the modern day yeshivas are probably doing a lot better than the Lodzim in percentage wise. Maybe not in creation of the Gedolim, but okay. That's the point. And the point is, if you learn Torah and you're aware that this is the Hashem, then that's healthy and that should have a hashpa. And the problem is, you have to get to that point. And there, Musa is very, very important. And allows you to realize what we're doing. It's encountering the Hashem Yom B'Yomo, and allows that to affect who we are and how we live. Okay, have a good Shabbos.
And, okay.